This is all theater. This is all just political theater.
Political theater. Political theater.
Pure political
theater.
Theater.
Political theater.
The nefarious,
significant, and protracted
political theater for political theater's sake.
I yield back.
From Washington, this is Political Theater. Roll Call's review of the spectacle of politics on Capitol Hill and across the country. I'm Jason Dick.
So what does it mean when both Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and former President Donald Trump agree on the same candidate? Because that's happened now in Ohio's Republican Senate primary. That was not the only win for the establishment, such as it is, during Tuesday's elections. So Roll Call's campaign staff writer Daniela Altomare spent some quality time in Ohio recently, and she and campaigns editor Herb Jackson are joining the podcast to discuss the results in Ohio, as well as Illinois, and even California. Daniela and Herb, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
I think for those who watch this on YouTube and other visual mediums for the podcast, they'll notice that it is now Herb who is in the Roll Call glass cage of emotion at 1201 Pennsylvania Avenue.
There's also a cocktail glass in here, Jason. I don't know how that happened, but...
You know, the mice. I think it's the mice. but I am in my lovely hometown of Cottonwood, Arizona. I somehow managed to be in Arizona the same time that the President of the United States is in Arizona, but not in the same town. This was a previously scheduled trip to Cottonwood, which is in Representative Eli Crane's district. In Yavapai County in Arizona, the president got into Arizona this week and is still there. And somehow just fortuitously, that's the way my luck is. I just couldn't make it down there to cover. But we're fine. We're not really going to talk about the president or his opponent, except in the context of these races that we talked about in the intro. So Daniela, let's start with the Ohio Republican primary. There were three gentlemen who were vying for the opportunity to challenge Senator Sherrod Brown, who won his own primary pretty easily. But he is definitely a toss-up race. It will be integral to determining who controls the majority in the Senate in the next Congress. Let's talk about your trip to Ohio. We talked about let's give the listeners, for those who perhaps aren't as tuned in as we are, who won, and then talk about your trip to Ohio, because you covered a lot of ground while you were there this past weekend.
Yeah, so it was interesting because this was sort of framed as a battle of the establishment versus the Trump wing. We saw Trump coming into the state on Saturday to do a rally for Bernie Moreno, who is a car dealer / tech entrepreneur, who a very wealthy individual who was the Trump-aligned candidate. And they all sort of spoke favorably of Trump. There were three candidates in the race, but Moreno got the Trump endorsement and appeared with him on the stage in Dayton at a rally a couple days before the election. So considered obviously a big prize. The other two candidates, there was Secretary of State Frank LaRose, who was an early favorite. He's the only one with, you know, broad name recognition. He holds statewide office, but he kind of peaked a few months ago and certainly didn't have the personal wealth to compete with the other two candidates. The third contender in the Republican primary was Matt Dolan, who's a state senator, and his family owns the Cleveland Guardians baseball team. So another very wealthy individual who poured a lot of his own money into this race. And he had the backing of, I guess you would call it, you know, the Republican establishment in Ohio, the governor, and former Senator Rob Portman. So it appeared that it was a two-person contest, though Dolan and Moreno were very close up until the end. However, as politicians always like to say, the poll that counts on election night did not turn out to be that close at all. And Moreno won very comfortably.
Yeah, I saw. I mean, I was tuning in a little bit like the last month or so to, you know, the Emerson College polling and some of the other polling that happened. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, Dolan had this, like, you know, steady number, but it was unclear if it was going to be, you know, if he was going to be able to clear that. And then there was just this huge number of undecideds. And it seems like they for the most part, broke for Moreno. And, you know, again, the former president, Donald Trump, was in Ohio at a rally for Moreno in Dayton over the weekend. And, you know, that the influence that Trump has on the party cannot be understated. I think we even may need to redefine what we consider the establishment, because now that his daughter-in-law helps run the RNC, I think that we can sort of say he's certainly been the most powerful person in Republican politics for the last 7 or 8 years. But now I think the takeover, you know, sort of is pretty much complete, leaving Mitch McConnell, Rob Portman, Mike DeWine kind of in the wind.
Absolutely. That's a really good point, I think.
I would say running for president 3 times makes you a career politician, no?
It seems like, it is difficult to define, the former president as anything but a political figure now. I mean, I know that most people know him from, you know, probably predating his political career, because he was so, such a figure in our culture, you know, dating back to the 70s. But yeah, when you control all the levers of politics in a way, you know, as comprehensive as him, he just, his influence and his, you know, the mechanisms that he can deploy now, funding and, you know, attention and email lists and all that kind of stuff is pretty wide. So we've got Moreno now, which again was Trump's preferred candidate. He likes him, businessman, blah blah blah. But Chuck Schumer also liked this guy. So what's going on there? I mean, Chuck Schumer's the super PAC that's affiliated with Senate Democratic leadership. Of course,
it makes independent expenditures.
Right. Ran ads attacking Moreno, much in the way that Adam Schiff's ads were attacking Steve Garvey in California. This seems to be the guy who the Democrats think that they can beat in a toss-up race. Is that a fair evaluation, Daniela?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to the sort of untrained eye, you see these ads and they tout Moreno as, you know, the Trump-endorsed candidate, the most conservative of the three. Well, that's certainly going to help with Republican primary voters. And I think you're right. There were a lot of undecided voters. And, you know, some of the early voting in Ohio broke for, the exit polls suggest perhaps it broke for Dolan. And then the surge of, you know, people who voted on election day, perhaps being more in the Trump worldview that they don't trust early voting. They had seen those ads running all weekend and last week. And I think, you know, you would have to argue they made an impact.
And as far as we can tell, I mean, this is probably going to stay a toss-up race for a while, because on one hand, Ohio is a becoming a reliably Republican state. Certainly over the last few elections, it is no longer considered a swing state. And Sherrod Brown is the, you know, kind of the last of the statewide Democrats. I mean, but his name goes back very far in Ohio politics, not just him, but also his family. He's from Cleveland, and he sort of wears that as a badge of honor. He kind of has this gravelly voice and shaggy hair. Perhaps there's a connection here. Maybe he's connected to my family too. He's married to Connie Schultz, who is a longtime Cleveland Plain Dealer columnist. So I mean, he's got his own brand, and so it's really the dynamics in this race are going to be kind of fascinating. Whether Brown's own brand can outrun those Republican trends in Ohio.
Yeah, he's the last Democrat to hold statewide office. And, you know, I spoke to somebody, a Republican county commissioner, very, you know, ran for Congress himself, very strong Republican. And he had to give props to Brown, saying that, you know, he's probably the only person, quote, that liberal who could still win in Ohio. It's probably worth noting that Senator Brown is an Ohio State graduate, and Bernie Moreno is a University of Michigan graduate. So the negative ads that could come from just that alone.
Just around Big Ten weekends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know. That's a great. I mean, again, when you're talking about one of these races, it's going to be so close like that. Every little bit, you can bet they were going to squeeze every little bit of advantage that they can. All right, and that was not the only race. So that's going to be a marquee race for the rest of the year, you know, until Election Day. But there were also some other kind of competitive races that you know, some races. One, let's talk about Marcy Kaptur's opponent. She's a Toledo-based congresswoman, Democrat, who, you know, has been there, you know, several decades. She's you know, again, has her own brand, and as a Democrat in a state that's been trending away from Democrats for a while. But there, you know, there's a competitive primary. And she benefited from running against a very flawed candidate in 2022. It seems like Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, got his preferred candidate to take on Kaptur. Let's talk about that race.
Well, you know, what I had noticed is that, you know, Craig Maron, the winner of the primary, who's a state legislator and apparently was part of this real brutal battle over Speaker of the House in the state legislature. Could you imagine big fights over the Speaker of the House?
But can't imagine.
Came up on the downside of that. Was recruited to run because, you know, they were trying to get somebody who was not so heavily baggaged to take on Marcy Kaptur. And, you know, the Congressional Leadership Fund, which is an independent spending committee that's allied with the Speaker of the House, spent heavily to help him. And you know, this is a race that, you know, the Republicans think they should be able to win. Marcy Kaptur is one of, I think, five Democrats in the House who are in districts that, in their current configuration, backed Trump over Biden in 2020. So it's going to be a much harder race for her than if she was running against the guy who lied about his military record 2 years ago, who was still running up until last week, and was still on the ballot, but he's still on the ballot, but for reasons I don't still quite understand, his votes were not tallied last night, or they weren't giving us the tallies for his votes. So, you know, I learned that while the numbers were coming in. But yeah, that's going to be a race. You know, he was facing another state legislator who had the backing of Jim Jordan, the House Freedom Caucus chairman, co-founder, I should say.
Now the Judiciary Committee chairman and the chairman of the Select Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government.
Yeah, that guy. So there was some of this, you know, Republican on Republican rivalry going on here. But I mean, the question we have, I guess, about that race and the one in the Senate is whether the people who didn't win are going to work too hard for the people who did win, and whether or not there was something they heard about the people who won that they just can't get behind them in November.
Let's also talk about a place that you caught up with some of the Senate candidates as well, Daniela, which is in the Ohio River Valley in the Youngstown area of former Rep. Bill Johnson, who left Congress to take a job as president of Youngstown State University. There was a special election primary for his replacement. Let's talk about that race and you know, some of the folks that you met in that. When you went to that event in where was it again?
That was in Salem, Ohio.
Salem,
Ohio, and not far from the site of the train derailment last year. That featured, there were three candidates running for that seat, a chiropractor, and then two sitting state legislators, one a state rep and one a state senator. And the state senator, whose district is larger, who has deep roots in both of the counties that comprise two of the largest counties that comprise the congressional district where the bulk of the population lives. He won. His family owns a grocery store Ruley's Market, Ruley Brothers Market, and his ads featured prominently the market. So, you know, reminding folks that here's this guy that has deep ties to the community.
They were building a wall with cans of tomato paste in one of the ads.
Yes, with the name of the family name on there. And he works
on the cans of tomato paste.
That sounds Warholian. That sounds like something Andy Warhol would do like 50 years ago.
Ruley tomato paste is going to keep the attacking, keep the fentanyl out.
Yeah. So he, you know, he had a big advantage, geography and name recognition and all that. So he won that seat. And, you know, the stakes for that seat and the other open seat in Ohio, it pretty high stakes because, you know, those are solid red districts. So if you win the primary, you're pretty much assured that you'll be going to Congress and, you know, you could have a long career there. So, you know, there's a lot at stake in some of these primaries. It isn't just all, you know, these two guys fighting for the nomination. They're really fighting for the seat.
Before we talk about our next result, I do want to back up because I just realized why I said Gary Majewski instead of J.R. Majewski. Thank you for correcting, by the way, Herb. I think that the only reason I can think that I was thinking Gary Majewski is because Gary Majewski was a former Washington Nationals pitcher, also who started with the organization when they were still in Montreal and they were the Expos. And I think I just had old, you know, obscure Nationals / Expos pitchers on the brain when I think of the name.
If we're making corrections, the guy who won the primary to face Marcy Kaptur's name is Derek Marin. He beat Craig Rydell. I mixed their first names up.
There we go. Transparency at its best.
I got the last name right, and that's the guy who won. But
let's focus on the good.
Yeah.
Okay. And I again, for a lot more detail, you know, we'll put in the show notes Daniela's story about the Ohio Senate results, as well as her story from over the weekend, as well as your takeaways that will be published on Roll Call. As well as the what to watch. I mean, there's a lot more detail and the results, takeaways, what to watch, and so forth in the show notes. But I also want to talk about. I want to jump over Indiana. I want to pole vault Indiana and go to Illinois and talk about some of the races that we were watching there. Because again, these were less about a flip. You know, they weren't seats that were up for grabs in November. But there were a couple of competitive primaries, one a Democrat that we've been sort of watching in the last few years because he's had a couple of challenges. And then another weird challenge to a Republican at this like very deep red state that just kind of came out of nowhere and put a scare in. So let's start with Chicagoland and Danny Davis, the congressman, longtime congressman from the Chicago area, and what happened in his primary.
So Davis is 82, so
Joe Biden is, he should run for president.
Joe Biden is a young pup compared to him. And, you know, he's an old-time, you know, Chicago pal, you know, former councilman, ran for mayor once.
Aren't they called aldermans there?
Yeah.
It's just a
cool in fact, there was an alderman in another race. Yeah. But,
ran against cool Chewy Garcia. Alderman. It's like when you're talking about New York politics, you're talking about hamlets, you know, and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. You used to have freeholders in New Jersey. But, you know, that's the obligatory Jersey mention. You get to do an obligatory movie mention later. Right. So Danny Davis faced two challengers. One was the city treasurer, who was also facing some ethics challenges for having fired some employees.
In Illinois? In Chicago?
Yeah, I know. Can you believe it? And there was another woman, Kina Collins, who was a community organizer who had run against him in 2022. She lost then. There was some heavy spending by the pro-Israel group United Democracy Project against her. And then a very, like, snipey note last night after the elections were coming to just say, she lost, the squad loses again, you know, and it was sort of, you could sort of sense from the tone of it that, you know, there was concern given the way Democratic politics have been, especially when the president goes places and people are yelling about, you know, the war in Gaza, that this could be a problem for, if it became a problem for House incumbents – there was going to be some concern. And there wasn't. Davis did not really have a problem. He won over 50% of the vote, even though there were multiple challengers. So, you know, his campaign was saying that last week, that they said he's not going to lose. These people are not going to beat him. But, you know, you never know when people go in and vote, especially in elections like this where the presidential race is already settled, who is coming out and what is motivating them. So
now let's go downstate to Mike Bost's district. This is a, you know, veteran, you know, Republican House member, pretty conservative, endorsed by Trump, you know, kind of
chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee.
Yeah, you know, very important in that region, and it has been for years. And you know, all of a sudden, Matt Gaetz, because I guess they got into it over the speaker votes last year. Matt Gaetz wanted to, you know, tell people that Mike Bost wasn't nice and couldn't control his temper. I don't know, something like that.
Well, this is one of those cases where TV news ran clips from C-SPAN. That's what you need to know.
People lunging at each other on the floor.
Is that in January of 2023, when Gaetz was nominating Jim Jordan to run against Kevin McCarthy for speaker and started saying everybody who's voting for Kevin McCarthy is only doing that because he raised whatever, $11 gazillion. Bost got up there and was yelling on the House floor and doing this. And then fast forward to last summer or last fall when Gaetz and some of his colleagues moved the motion to vacate the chair and McCarthy was ousted. And then it took them another week or so to find a new speaker. There were reports in other outlets that in a closed conference, Congressman Bost lunged at Gaetz, and Gaetz happily said, "Oh, he was kind of mad at me." And then he went and campaigned in Gaetz's in Bost's district for a guy, Darren Bailey, who had run for governor in 2022. And in, just like we were talking about with Bernie Moreno, the Democratic governor, who's independently wealthy, ran ads attacking Darren Bailey in the primary as too conservative because he wanted to beat Darren
Bailey.
See what
you're doing there, Governor Pritzker.
Which he did. He did beat Darren Bailey, but Darren Bailey came out of that race a well-known conservative figure,
yeah,
with nothing to do because he had given up his state Senate seat to run for governor. So along comes, you know, Mike Bost going like this, and there's some attitude that we've been watching for to see how much it is, yeah, you know, just like I was just describing with the anti-Israel Democrat, how much of the anti-McCarthy Republican thing is there out there? Will it start costing any members seats? And in Mike Bost's case, it didn't. I mean, he only won by 3 points, but he won.
Yeah.
He did heavily spend against Darren Bailey, and he got Trump's endorsement. So which one of those factors? I would imagine if all the other things had been there and Trump had been on Bailey's side, we might be looking at a different thing. But you know, Veterans Affairs is not, you know, like one of your money committees, as we call them. It's more constituent service stuff.
Yeah, it's not. But boy, I mean, when you have as many veterans in that district, I mean, it's always been an issue, you know, in sort of downstate Illinois politics. So
yeah, I'm just saying, if you're going to attack somebody as being an establishment Republican,
right,
the chairman of VA is right, not. You know,
maybe it's because he wears three-piece suits, Bost. Is that the test for?
What are you saying, Jason? I mean, it was cold out this morning.
All right, last race I want to talk about: California. We had yet another. I mean, this wasn't the call.
Every 2 weeks there's an election in California. Exactly. Still counting the votes from the previous.
This was not the drag from Super Tuesday. This is an actual primary. Let's talk about that, and then we'll wrap up.
Yeah, so this is it is confusing because it's to fill the rest of Kevin McCarthy's seat, and then I guess was it 2 weeks ago they had the primary.
It feels like 2 years, but
it was two weeks ago.
Just earlier this month, but so you know, there's a McCarthy lieutenant who Vincent Fong, who's running for both, you know, the unexpired term and also the new term, because California does things kind of uniquely. They have nonpartisan primaries. So the top two vote getters of either, you know, whatever party will proceed to the ballot, you know, to the general election ballot. So Fong did secure one seat. The other seat is still up in the air, and hopefully that will be decided before they actually have the election. Fingers crossed. That's between a Republican sheriff and a Democrat. And, you know, I think the Republican was ahead the last we saw, but, you know, it's still fairly close. The Associated Press has not called the race yet. So, We'll see what happens there. That's another one that we'll be watching.
Yeah, and if Fong had gone over 50%, I think there was like six other people running.
Yeah,
if Fong had gone over 50%, he would have won the seat. He would have run the unexpired term.
Yeah.
Last night, Tuesday night. But now they're going to have have another election in June, I believe it is,
which is when the California primary used to be. By the way, yep. for those of you, you know, wondering who that person was who was waving to us and to you, the viewers,
background,
it was Jacob Rabashkin, friend of the podcast, Inside Elections, Jacob Rabashkin.
We're reading his stuff now, anyway.
Yeah, man who can wax on everything egg bagels. all right, well. Daniela, Herb, I know it was a late night, with the tallying the votes and writing. You've been writing the takeaways, and you worked all weekend long. Daniela, thank you for going to Ohio, and reporting from there. And I think this is a great little rundown. And again, for those of you who want a little bit more detail, check out the show notes because we'll have the takeaways from these races as well as Daniela's on the ground reporting. Just a straight, results tally.
And we'll spell everybody's name right.
That's what we strive for. Every once in a while.
Standards.
There goes Jacob again in the background. Is that a barn jacket he has on? It must be campaign season if he has a barn jacket on. All right. Well, Daniela, Herb, thank you again. Thank you out there, listeners, for listening. I plan on returning to the roll call glass cage of emotion at a certain point. But for now, I'm signing off from the Verde Lux Hotel in Cottonwood, Arizona. Thanks for listening. And tell all your friends about this magic moment. Take care.